Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to episode 35 of the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life podcast. My name is Marcus Freestone, and I am the one speaking now from out of my face. So, sorry for the absence of an episode last week. Had a bit of a rubbish week health-wise, but I'm back now, and, well, I'm not fighting fit. Well, I'm not fit. No, I am fit. Well, I am fighting in the sense of I'm here. Okay, enough of that. Let's get on with the episode. So, today. I've developed a weird stutter, but I actually say the whole word. Okay. This week, that's better, this week's episode is entitled Solitude. And there goes my phone. Hello.
Hi, what are we arranged for today anyway? I can't remember.
Do you know, I've just started recording my podcast, so in a way, we are now broadcasting, except of course we're not, because I'll stop. Sorry about that. I don't really believe in spooky coincidences or serendipity, but I was just thinking, for some reason I was thinking yesterday about when I record this, do you know, my girlfriend's never phoned me during an episode, and now I'm about a minute in and she phoned me, and I really genuinely wasn't expecting that. Anyway, never mind, let's crack on. So this week we are talking about solitude, which is the one of the less distressing words at the moment. I've talked on the show before and in the books about reframing. I think rather than saying I'm in lockdown or, you know, one of those horrible, negative, scary, apocalyptic film sounding words, I am currently enjoying some solitude. That's a much better way of saying it, isn't it? Okay, so one of the main problems people are currently experiencing is the prospect of an indefinitely lengthy period of enforced solitude. Whether you live alone or not, this is not how most of us have been used to living our lives. That being said, I'm undoubtedly more naturally drawn towards solitude than the majority of people, yet even I've been struggling with this new, uncertain situation. However, this natural inclination of mine and my extensive experience of solitude puts me in a good position to offer some advice for those of you not used to living an isolated existence. The first thing to say is that solitude does not equate to loneliness. They are two different things. This is something you need to drill into your subconscious, though not literally, I mean, psychologically, goes without saying. Solitude is a state of being, whereas loneliness is a state of mind. So solitude is something you experience, it's a situation, whereas loneliness is a collection of thoughts and emotions you are projecting onto the situation. In other words, the situation, the solitude, may not be voluntary, but the loneliness, the state of mind, is voluntary. You don't have to experience loneliness just because you're alone. And it's a hoary old cliche to use, for some reason, an archaic English word. That's H-O-A-R-Y, not W-H-O-R-E-Y. That would be a strange to use hoary in that sense, if that even is a word, I don't know. So, it's a slutty old cliche. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. Anyway, it's a cliche, but it's true. A lot of cliches are. I am only ever lonely when I'm with other people. So, that maybe, for those of you who've never experienced that, requires a little bit of an explanation. So when you're a child, you you have no frame of reference, so you just think that whatever your life is like when you're, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you think that that experience is normal because you have nothing really to compare it to, certainly when you're very young. But I now realise that my childhood was statistically unusual in that my parents divorced when I was a baby, so I never lived with my father and I had no siblings. And I know from my recent study of psychology that not necessarily having one parent, but having no siblings means that you don't really get the early practice of socializing with other people, which I've talked about in previous episodes. But what this means is, in terms of solitude, is that obviously I experienced more than anyone who has two parents or have brothers and sisters, or perhaps a large extended family, which I also didn't have. My mother had no brothers or sisters as well. So for the first 7 years of my life, it was essentially me, my mother, and her mother and father, my grandparents. So I spent a lot of time on my own. And, you know, when you're 3 and 4 and you're on your own most of the time, it's not something you question. It is merely your state of existence. So in whatever way you can, you adapt to it. And I see this now, much as elements of my childhood have undoubtedly damaged me, I see the fact that I, whilst it's a negative thing that I didn't learn to socialise at an early age, and that continues to have ramifications for me now that I'm nearly 48 years old. But the positive aspect, which I think really, to a very large extent, outweighs that negative sort of slightly socially autistic thing I have, is that I learned from the age of 3 or 4 to be happy in my own company. And I don't require, I suppose also a corollary of that is I don't really, in many ways a lot of people do, I don't require the validation of other people. Because my existence was so solitary from as young as I can remember, I just think, well, that's my life. I'm mainly on my own and I do my own thing. And I don't really need other people. In some ways, that's negative, but I think overall it's a positive thing. Certainly in this situation now. I mean, I've lived on my own for most of my adult life. Nearly 20 years now, I've lived on my own in a house or now in a flat. So I'm used to solitude. I embrace it. I enjoy it. And I kind of resent when it's intruded upon. So I developed my imagination from a very early age. From the age of 3, I would lie awake at night inventing stories. And I, as I mentioned before, somehow I learned to read very early on. I could read before I went to school. I don't know how, but I was reading proper books by the time I was 5. By proper books, I don't mean I was reading Dickens, or, well, I don't rate Dickens, but, you know, I wasn't reading Dostoevsky or stuff at 5, obviously, but I was reading, you know, adult books, as opposed to, you know, not just like Noddy and Big Ears or the Janet and John simple read. I was reading, you know, books about history and science and stuff, which I've mentioned in a previous episode, I'm sure. But with regards to the current situation and what a lot of people I know listening will be struggling with, the advantage I have in this situation is that I developed a sense of self-reliance very early on, that I don't need the company of other people, and I don't feel lonely when I'm on my own. I only feel lonely when I'm with other people. Because of my certain lacking in social skills, I feel alienated from other people. And also, I'm sure I've mentioned it before, but if I'm in a room with another family, whether they're getting on or not, I feel alienated from that situation because I have no experience of a normal functioning two-parent, brother and sister family. I've literally never experienced that. So it makes me uneasy because I don't understand it. I can't empathise with it. I don't know what it is. It's a sort of alien concept to me, largely speaking. So in many ways, I'm thriving in the current situation because my life has hardly changed because I'm on my own most of the time anyway. Because of this childhood I had and the subsequent adult life I currently have, basically I'm just much happier in my own company and with other people. And I know that a lot of kids growing up are into sports and collective social activities. And I really wasn't. I generally don't, apart from snooker and cricket, I don't like sport. I certainly hate football and the things that you're supposed to like. And I never enjoyed being Welsh. I was forced to play rugby in school. It was compulsory and I hated it. I don't like team games, not because I'm uncooperative or whatever, but I found the pressure of it just too much. I was a very shy, neurotic child, and in junior school I was very fat. And having eczema as well, you know, and being neurotic, I was picked on a lot. But I hated team games, particularly football, because some boys take it just so seriously. And whenever I'd be, you know, be coerced into playing it at playtime, or when we had a games lesson and we'd have to play football, you know, if I would miss a goal or I'd be in goal and I'd let one in, you know, I mean, I was physically bullied for being rubbish at football. And it was a thing in the early 80s. People had just come up to me and go, "What's your favourite team? What's your favourite team?" I haven't got one. And, you know, you get smacked in the face for not liking football. Anyway, that's kind of by the by, but the point is that I never gravitated towards these social things, which a lot of people do. So that's another way in which in the current situation I have a big advantage, in that I've never gravitated towards or enjoyed these sort of sporting or social situations. So all my hobbies basically involve me sat at home at the computer being creative or reading books or listening to music, listening to podcasts, and they're all things I can do on my own. Although I do also share them, you know, I love listening to music with my girlfriend. We have broadly similar tastes, sort of meeting in the middle. And I love sharing a new comedy or drama or something that I've discovered with my girlfriend or friends, someone who hasn't seen it before. I love watching a comedy show that I've enjoyed with someone else and sitting next to them and hearing them laugh and enjoying it. And I really love that. So I'm social in that sense, but I don't really require that very much. So the upshot of all that is that I'm usually happier on my own because it's the state to which I am most accustomed. And I've known many people who seem incapable of tolerating their own company. My first proper girlfriend I lived with for 3 years in my early 20s. I remember we had this very small flat and I had my, well, computer's an exaggeration, it was an Amstrad. if you know Alan Sugar, and Alan Sugar started The Apprentice for American people. If you know, the early Amstrad computers were these just behemoths with a horrible screen with green writing on it. It was a word processor, basically. But I had that in the bedroom and I would go in and I'd be working on a novel. And my girlfriend literally could not go. She'd been in the other room watching TV and she couldn't go 10 minutes without coming in. "What are you doing? Have you finished yet?" And I just found it so irritating. Like, can't you spend a couple of hours on your own? And literally, no, she couldn't. She was incapable of spending time on her own because she defined herself entirely through the company of other people. And that's the kind of extreme opposite to my situation. I don't know what in her upbringing brought that about. I don't know. She did have a brother, and her parents divorced when she was in her teens, so she kind of grew up with a sort of family unit. But I said part of, and I've known lots of other people like that as well, the part of, in fact, all the people I've known or encountered in my life, I've known far more people who are incapable of tolerating their own company than people who are happy in their own company. And I think this is largely down to a lack of imagination, but also it's certainly to do with whether you have an internal or external locus of control. Now, I can't remember if I've mentioned this on the show before, but very briefly and basically, locus of control is a psychological term often used in psychotherapy. And basically it means that if you have an internal locus of control, then you believe that you are essentially in control of your own life, that you make decisions and carry them out and you're the one in charge. Whereas people with an external locus of control believe that life is something that happens to them and the world around them shapes them. So if you have an external locus of control, then you're obviously going to require other people. And in the absence of other people, you don't know what's going on. Whereas if you have an internal locus of control, then psychologically you're much better adapted to solitude. Another important thing to bear in mind in the current situation is that you are not being excluded from anything. Everyone around you is in the same boat or houseboat if you live on a river. I'm aware that one of the annoying phrases often used as an incorrect acronym is fear of missing out, or FOMO. And I won't bang on about this, but it's one of the linguistic things that really bugs me about misuse of the English language, is that FOMO is not an acronym. An acronym is a set of initials of a phrase that spell out a word. So, trying to think of one now. I can't think of one. But FOMO is not a word. Oh God, I'm trying to think of one now. There's all sorts in psychology. So, in fact, the only acronym I can think of is my oldest friend from school, who I've known since I was four. He's the same age as me. And when he was doing computers in the sixth form, they had to construct this database, and he called it Area Recall Search Entry, which spells out arse in the English spelling. An arse is a word for your posterior region. In America, it would be ass, which is a donkey, which is quite biblical. So I don't know if there's something Freudian going on there. Anyway, the point is that although he got top marks for it, because he now works in IT and builds websites and stuff, his teacher wrote on it in red pen, "Be careful with your acronyms." So arse, Area Recall Search and Entry, that's an acronym. But FOMO and LOL and all this other stuff, they are not acronyms. Anyway, here endeth the lesson. So the point is, I know that this fear of missing out is a kind of thing amongst millennials, probably because of Facebook. But the truth is, you're not missing out on anything, because A, everyone else around you is equally affected, and B, the things you feel that you're missing out on are currently impossible or non-existent. So you might think, oh, I'm missing out on going to parties. Well, parties don't exist and no one else is going to them. I'm missing out on my favourite sport or whatever. Well, sport has ceased to exist. So you're not missing out because it doesn't exist. So you need to kind of frame it like that. And I've said many times, but there's only any point in worrying about things over which you have control. And I willingly hold up my hands, mea culpa, you know, at this point, because last week I had a bit of a meltdown over the whole lockdown situation here in Wales, and even though it's had almost zero effect on me, I found myself resenting it, and my tendency to overthink everything briefly spiraled out of control, and I became quite depressed about my life, which I haven't done for a while, because I was focusing on things I can do nothing about and not doing all the things I enjoy and can control, doing podcasts, making music, writing books, doing all the things that I am doing now and have been doing for years, and are completely unaffected by the lockdown. In fact, it gives me more time to do them. So the lockdown for me should almost be a positive, not a negative. But I just was in that, you know, I framed it negatively last week, and now I'm framing it positively. So one of my solutions to this has been to only look at the news once a day at 6 p.m. after the UK government daily briefing. Then I'll know everything I need to, and I can get back onto cracking on with my day, because most of it just doesn't affect me. Another problem I've always had is that I hate being told what to do, even by myself. I don't really know where this comes from, but how it manifests itself is I make a decision, and even if it's something I really, really want to do and I know I'll enjoy, another part of my brain will go, no, you're not telling me what to do. We're not going to do that. And so I have this whole kind of split personality thing going on, arguing about, you know, not wanting to do things that I love anyway. I don't know where it comes from, and it's annoying, but it's not as bad as it used to be. But it does still happen sometimes. So in this current lockdown, even though I'm spending almost exactly the same amount of time at home on my own, facing the same things I ordinarily would, I still find myself being resentful that I could now potentially be arrested if I go out twice on the same day. Although the chances of this actually happening to me in the area where I live are so close to zero that it's not worth a millisecond of thought. And yet last week it was on my mind every time I went out. If a police car drove past me, I would tense up. Even though I'm on my own, I'm practicing the government prescribed social distancing, I'm not doing anything wrong, and I'm all too aware that most countries have it a lot worse, and many people can't leave home at all. But it still grates on me that the Welsh pretend government, don't get me started on that, it'll be 10 minutes of our lives, neither of us will get back. The Welsh pretend government have actually written this into law, whereas England, Wales, England, Scotland, Northern Ireland haven't actually put it into the legal system, but this dickhead who runs Wales has. Anyway, leave that aside for now. And, you know, if I go to my local Tesco supermarket, I've been going there at 6 in the morning or 9 at night, because you go there in the afternoon and they're, because they're doing this social distancing thing, they're doing a sort of one in, one out policy, and you have a half hour queue. And I'm aware that this is generally in Wales and in most of Britain, this is a kind of peaceful thing that just people just mill around and do what they need to do. I'm aware, you know, in America or Russia or in many countries, you have a queue like that outside a supermarket, there'd be armed police enforcing it. So, you know, the lockdown, in inverted commas, certainly here in Cardiff, is pretty mild, really. I don't have anything to complain about. But last week I did, but now I'm not. So, victory for me in the positive stakes. Anyway, the point is, focus on what you can control. If you're stuck at home, then you have control over your environment and how you react to it, much more so than when you're in the outside world and you're with society at large and other people. Try and embrace this as a positive rather than negative. If this goes on for long enough, I may even open the tin of paint I bought 13 months ago and give my flat a much needed redecoration. My girlfriend, who's usually very social and teaches exercise classes, has been using her time home to organise and declutter her flat, which has already produced visibly positive results. And she's enjoying doing things she's always wanted to do, but never has the time or energy for. And so, you know, she temperamentally would be much more prone to be mentally affected by this lockdown situation, and yet really she's coping with it better than I am, which doesn't make sense. Well, it does make sense because I'm just being a baby about it. But I'm not now, so it's fine. Being isolated with other people obviously brings its own challenges, but if you live alone, then really this is almost a golden time. You can use solitude productively or allow it to use you in a negative manner. Of course, if you're isolating in a home with other people, then you may well be currently craving solitude. Even if you get on with those other people, it's difficult to be forced into sharing a small space with them for a prolonged period. And if you don't get on with them, it can be positively hellish. And I'd love to give you some pertinent and useful advice on dealing with social isolation with others, but I'm not experiencing that. And I don't really have much experience of normal family life. So there, you'll probably have to switch to other podcasts to, there are lots of podcasts of comedian couples talking about the problems of living together in this situation. So, go to those podcasts if you're in that situation, but don't go to other podcasts, but come back to me. Don't leave me. I'm alone here. Please listen to my podcast. Oh dear. Okay. I haven't had much sleep. I'm slightly giddy. So, okay. That's the episode. That's the episode? I'm going to stick with that word. That's the episode on solitude. Oh dear. We've gone into spoonerisms now. Anyway, never mind. So, that's the episode on solitude. Hope that's useful for you. I'm sure it is. Let's be positive. Let's not hope it's useful. Let's assume it is, because I get messages from people saying that they are useful. So, there we go, and a strange intonation of my voice. I'm going to shut up now because I'm a bit high on coffee and lack of sleep. So, that's solitude. Sorry about no episode last week. I'm going to do my utmost to record a few this week to make up for it and do some Patreon episodes as well. When I get around to it in the next couple of days, I'm going to reduce the Patreon to one tier of $2 a month. Please, please, please consider subscribing to that. I really could do with the money and the support and the interest and encourage me to give you some extra stuff. So that's Positive Thinking, The Meaning of Life, episode 35, Solitude. Hope you're all doing well. Hope you're all coping with this, and I'll see you soon. Bye bye.